Well, it turns out Ferrari decided to do the whole British guy coming to the team a year early. Who'd have thought? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Congratulations to our friend and yours, Ollie Bearman, for officially winning Formula One's Rookie of the Year for 2024. Fine achievement.
Hey, we don't know that. We don't know that. So another person could come down with a case of Ligma. One of the Red Bull drivers. You know, you never know.
Well, you never know. Hi, I'm Andre Harrison. Welcome to episode 502 of Motorsport 101. Good to have you with us as ever. And Formula One, it happened in Saudi Arabia this weekend. It was, the vibes were immaculate. Everybody was delighted with how things were going. It was a weekend. Is that
fair
to say?
What's your definition of delighted?
Deeply, deeply sarcastic. not great.
Well. If it isn't F1 induced horrors beyond my comprehension.
That's Cam Buckley, by the way. It's just him on the show this weekend. Turns out RJ O'Connell is covering Sebring this weekend. He's flying over there by the time this goes out.
A couple extra days to, you know, get that respect for the bumps in.
You have
to respect the bumps.
Oh, yeah. He's going to take like 15 track walks between now and the actual race itself this weekend. But, I'm glad he's following protocol and respecting the bumps. You'll see him again on episode probably 505 next week, depending on if Formula E actually decides to have some racing in Sao Paulo this weekend. Whether that happens remains to be seen. We'll have to wait and see. But until then, it's me and Cam Buckley for the next two episodes. So I hope you guys enjoy that. Also, I've got some personal news to discuss real quick before we get into it. I try not to be too self-indulgent on this show, but after episode 500, fuck it, I might as well. I've got a new job! Yay!
Employment, woo! Baby! Let's go!
Get money on the back. Yes, for those of you who haven't seen the news on social media already, I am now a part of the Motorsport Network, officially. That's a thing now. I am now working for the biggest motorsport journalism company on Earth, which is the stuff of dreams. What can I say? It's incredible.
You ever just trip and fall and go straight to the sky?
I landed up.
Not in a death sense, in a sense this is great. You don't need me to tell you, he kicks so much ass for us and for everything that you do. And I'm very, very proud of you. I'm also very proud of you that you are finally joining the dark side.
I love that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me during an episode, and yet you had to follow it up by something shit just to balance the books.
Not at all. That's a phenomenal computer.
Yes.
Now, for my employer's sake, can't say what, but it's a nice piece.
It's a fruit based technology company, but for those who didn't need the help, but company perks as you do. But no, this was 3 months in the working. It's been since before Christmas. I was in talks with them, and it went back and forth. I wasn't sure if it was ever actually going to happen. At a certain point, they've been on a bit of a hiring spree, which is great. They're bumping up their content creation and social media team. I stuck my name in the ring and they wanted to talk to me, and they created this new role of production coordinator just for me, which is incredible. So I'm going to be helping out a lot behind the scenes to start off with, video editing, audio editing, writing, just trying to find ways of converting their editorial, the incredible editorial team, you know, people like Jonathan Noble and et cetera, the very best in the business, and getting those fantastic stories and turning them into stories that you can digest and read or watch and enjoy in a variety of ways. Hopefully as well, they've talked about the possibility of more front-facing stuff in the future as well, including podcasts, maybe even presenting in video stuff as well. So I'm a glue guy. They're just going to plug me in wherever, and I think they'll get something decent out of it. So sincere thank you. And I was overwhelmed by, I think over 10,000 people saw the tweet, which is just fucking bonkers that it went semi-viral that, oh yeah, Dre got a job. Wow. Shit. No benefits for me. But no, sincerely, thank you all so much for all the kind words. It really does mean the world. They've been incredible in that. Special shout outs and thanks to Laura Leslie, who put my name in that, who suggested me for the job. Rosie and Hazel Southwell, who all gave glowing recommendations. Those who know our history, we've had Hazel on the show multiple times. And he's still one of the very best Formula E journos in the world. And they were all incredibly helpful. And I owe them so much for that. So big thanks to them. But don't worry, we're going nowhere here either. That is a promise. They have said that they've got no problem with me continuing to do this as long as I'm not criticizing the monolith. As we joke.
This does mean the death of a certain motorsport 101 tradition.
Mm.
And that's okay.
That's okay. It's a sacrifice I'm prepared to make for the greater good.
The greater good, he says. And to that same effect, I mean, now that my availability is fixed, finally,
yay!
I'm gonna have Wednesdays off, going pretty much from April onwards. So y'all might actually see a regular schedule.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because right now I'm basically just having to skirt around work scheduling, just to get these shows in. I'm just like, you know what? After work today, I'm getting a sandwich and I'm recording some pods.
We're doing the next two today. We're doing one tomorrow, but I believe a good chance we're going to get Christopher the Hardy from Front Stretch on the IndyCar St. Petersburg episode, which we're going to be recording in real time tomorrow. But by actual release standards, probably a couple of days from the time you're listening to this one. Luckily, we've got a bit of a free week coming up, with only Formula E being the only major series we regularly cover on the pod next weekend. So we'll just spread them out a little bit. We'll catch back up and then we'll pluck in for Australia in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, we've got to talk about what I like to call the weekend of beatings. Because there was beatings everywhere. There was beatings in F1, there was beatings in MotoGP, there was big beatings in IndyCar, and there was even beatings in NASCAR. We don't even cover that because Christopher Bell slaughtered the entire field in Phoenix too. Yay. So round one of our weekend of beatings is Formula One in Saudi Arabia. And we'll be getting into that. The Oddie Behrman substitute appearance scene around the world. I'd like to call shit-hassery as to how they got their first point of the season. And
if we still named episodes, that would be a perfect episode name.
Thank you. I'm here all week. I wish I could call it shit-hassery. That's a great name. I'm proud of me for that one. That was a good one. Unfortunately, we've got to talk yet more bullshit around Red Bull because the ride never ends. It's like Russell Wilson going to the Steelers. Steelers Nation, let's melt, etc. So all of that in the next hour or so. But of course, places you can find this. My Twitter username hasn't changed this time. It's at DreHarrison101. You can follow Cam at CBuckley917 and RJ O'Connell at RJ O'Connell. And if you haven't already, given we've already had a round, but hey, it's still up there. Do check out the website's blog. He wrote a fantastic full-length guide to the 2024 Super Formula season, which is incredible work.
And beatings exponential over in Super Formula because Mr. Nojiri once again takes his mantle of ha 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 ha, you thought it would be different this time, but written in Japanese.
Yeah, he's still him, etc. And
absolutely him.
Absolutely him. So beatings all round and the beatings continue, etc. So yeah, check out his full Super Formula season preview guide up there as well. If you haven't already, fantastic bit of work, and we're very glad he donated that to us for free. He had no business doing that as well. Also, outside chance, I'm going to try and talk Hazel round into getting some FE written content on the site as well. Fingers crossed, maybe. Well, I'm trying to get her into that. Maybe we'll see how we go. No promises, but I could certainly try. But yeah, all of that on the website as well. Of course, it's full race reviews from the usual Dre fashion for F1, MotoGP, and IndyCar this past weekend as well. If you're really lucky, you can also back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes, and you go up to the $10 tier to get Discord server access, as well as being able to listen to these shows live as they're being recorded, as Jason is in our audience right now. Thanks a lot for listening in, Jason. Right, without further ado, let's get into Formula One's 2024 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix of Sadness.
And you're all shocked. Max Verstappen continues the beatings with yet another flawless victory. To comfortably take another back-to-back Red Bull 1-2, career win number 56, and his 40th win in the last 50 races.
It's laughable when you say it like that.
What the hell is this stat line?
He's won 40 out of the last 50 and 19 out of the last 20. Like, we had one 9-race win streak in F1 history until earlier last year, and now
he's
Max
had
has two. Max
in
has
under
two of them.
A year.
The last time Max Verstappen lost the race was September. God. Anyway, but the show was stolen by a sudden replacement. Carlos Sainz suffered a nasty case of appendicitis over the course of the weekend. Get well soon, big fella. Had to have emergency surgery to fix it. Yes, shades of Alex Albon and Monza in 2022. In comes reserve driver and F2's own Ollie Bearman to sub in on Saturday, and he qualified 11th before finishing the Grand Prix in a very solid 7th place, winning Driver of the Day honours as well. I think it was a 48% majority vote on Driver of the Day, which is one of the strongest margins I can remember since we've had Driver of the Day. Ironically, it also means he now has more F1 points this year, 6, than F2 points this year, 0. It's amazing how these things turn out.
Well, the title town downfall is unfortunately being televised because Prema are kind of in the woods right now.
Bit mid.
Better this weekend. Much better this weekend.
Yeah, but Anthony was all right.
Awful in Bahrain.
They've never been good around Bahrain. Anyway, we've got to talk about the main event here, obviously. We're not going to talk about Max too much because Max was the most quiet Sunday drive you could ever imagine. What did you make of Behrman's sub-appearance, Cam?
Couldn't have asked more from the man, honestly. He got in the car and he looked fine pretty much right away. And there was points of that race where he was running reasonably close to Charles's pace. Now, that was pretty much in open air where you would expect that. But you need to consider the order of magnitude faster that this F1 car is compared to anything else he's driven before. I mean, what was the margin? 14 seconds quicker around a 6-kilometer circuit.
Yeah,
because this is one of the biggest disparities. This track is fast. It favors the high power and the exceptional high downforce at high speed that these F1 cars can make now.
155 mile an hour average speed in qualifying trim, which is second only to Monza.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily quick track. And I mean, do you see how hard his headrest was working?
There was a dent. I saw the picture. I mean, these guys are pulling 5 G's now through the corners in these cars. And obviously, with Ollie, obviously not having driven an F1 car at full speed ever, his neck clearly wasn't ready for that, understandably. So obviously, you know, it's F2 cars are fast enough, but they ain't F1 cars, let me tell you. And, you know, magnitudes more downforce, and not a surprise that headrest was getting extra work being done to it. And I mean, if you see him when he crosses the line, his head's pointing straight down, his neck is gone. at that point. Like, his neck is finished. Basically,
like, Lewis had to help kind of drag him out of the car to congratulate him as well.
Hamilton, that's his hero. We are now old enough. Well, Lewis is now at age 39, is now old enough where Ollie Bearman is literally young enough to be his son, if it came down to it, and it not sound weird for that to happen. Hamilton is Ollie Bearman's hero. And I love, like, how cool must it be to get out of a car in the shocking of weekends? You never think you'd be driving a Ferrari like this. Finishing seventh, scoring good points, and then Lewis Hamilton is giving you an ovation as you climb out of your car. That's a core memory right there, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
They did the British driver to Ferrari thing a little bit too early.
Yeah, very much so. Also, I think it was four Brits in the points for the first time since, I want to say, 68. It was the British block of it was Russell, then Bearman, Norris and Hamilton in that order. So, like, I called it Brexit division on the podcast and on our Discord server, I should say. So that was quite funny. But no, look, I can only echo your sentiments, Cam. That was exceptional. That was
you can't ask for it. And he was in the race. I think he did better than could have been asked. I think he really did do pretty much everything the car had to give in the circumstance. Because he was also late into the car in practice anyways, because we didn't know that Sainz would be out for the weekend until what, after FP1 as well. Yeah,
it was Saturday morning. It was first thing Saturday morning, the news had broken through. He's been rushed to hospital because obviously if your appendix is going, you got to get that shit out of there ASAP, basically. Yeah. So
I love evolutionary holdovers.
Yeah, as you do.
You do nothing but cause problems. given just FP3 and qualifying, was really a final corner mistake away from Q3, which was very, very close. I mean, again, that middle section of this field is so compressed right now.
Absolutely.
A couple tenths here and there, or a couple hundredths here and there, is going to get you in or out of a qualifying elimination round.
I want to say 36 thousandths away from knocking out Hamilton in Q2. Like, yeah.
Hamilton. And he didn't even really put it in the set list, but 3 years in a row, Mercedes has a fundamental issue with their car.
We had a good laugh about this on our Discord server, that Toto admitted again that the simulator in real life is telling him two different things. Like, their wind tunnel is not calibrated right. This is the third year in a row.
Yeah.
Since it's like this, like, every year since these regulations have come into play in 2022, this is year three of this reg set, and this is year three that Mercedes are complaining about synchronization problems with their simulators and wind tunnels. This is a problem, a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, and people, I think, underestimate just how big of a component that is, because there's been a lot made of Mercedes supposedly trusting the simulator over their drivers the last 2 years, which didn't work. But then this car being built much more around Lewis's preferences, well, that doesn't matter, because if your simulator isn't in tune with real life, it doesn't matter who you build the car around. It doesn't matter what you do. This car does not generate the downforce it does in the simulator in real life. And Mercedes was getting shot to pieces in the middle sector of this track. They were quick enough in a straight line that it kind of mitigated itself just by basically running no rear wing. But, I mean, in qualifying, Max took 0.4 out of them in the middle sector at times.
Yeah, I remember Oscar Piastri, who was fighting Hamilton for a good 20, 30 laps in the middle period of that race, when Piastri finally did get past him, I distinctively remember Piastri was 1.2 seconds in front by the time they got to sector three, the lap he'd passed him, and Hamilton was basically saying, my God, they're so fast in the middle sector, because that's turns 5 to 12. That's where all the downforce comes into play. And they were getting blown to pieces in that middle sector. They fundamentally do not have downforce right now. And I think a lot of people And I'm glad you mentioned this, Cam. A lot of people wanted to put Drive to Survive Season 6 and that clip in the episode of Hamilton saying that, oh, his engineers don't listen to him, and wanted to kind of account for that towards him wanting to leave the team. I'm glad you mentioned, because it clearly is more than that. It's just the fact that they fundamentally can't get their sim in order.
Yeah, and it's all well and good if your car can crush realities in its hand in the sim. If it can't in real life, it doesn't matter. And that, I think people discount how much of the struggles of 19 and 20 at Red Bull play into their dominance now, because the biggest thing that they had to do in that time period, where we forget the RB16A back in 2020, there were points where it could give the W11 a bloody nose, that mighty unbeatable car at high speed. At low and medium speed, the Red Bull was practically undrivable, and they were relying on Max to manhandle the thing to get lap time out of it. And going into their simulator work and rebuilding their pipeline to make sure that that car, what that car does in the wind tunnel and in the sim, is what it does in real life, is practically the cornerstone of Red Bull's domination now. When Red Bull does something in the sim, they put it on the track and it does the same thing. And you're not chasing problems. Mercedes has now been chasing the same fundamental issue for 3 years. And until they fix it, their hands are tied.
They're arguably the fourth best car in the field right now, because McLaren look comfortably better than them right now. And Ferrari, well, Hamilton's
Ferrari are clearly second best.
Clearly, it is second.
A chasm. Like, Red Bull, completely fucking uncatchable at the moment. They have a huge margin to the field. Then Ferrari, and it's a gap. And then probably McLaren and Mercedes are right near each other. McLaren isn't very good in a straight line, but it is bad fast through the quick corners.
What does it say that Hamilton was beaten straight up by Audie Behrman on debut?
That the Mercedes is an inferior car right now.
Yeah, it's startling.
And the work he puts in right now, the work that Russell puts in, it's not going to matter if that work they put in back in Brackley cannot be reflected out on track. Their hands are tied.
Yeah, I want it to be a bit messy, because it's the most intriguing part of the state of play of the field right now, is that second through fourth fight. I mean, Hal Fernando had a very good weekend under the radar, and no one's even mentioned the fact he cracked the top five. But
so I think everyone was looking across the garage and going, how are you this bad?
Right. Like, and again, we've been to Saudi Arabia 4 years in a row. Lance Stroll still hasn't scored a point in Saudi Arabia yet.
Has he finished?
His first 2 years, he was 11th and 13th. But he's crashed out the last 2 years. Now, to be fair, last year's wasn't his fault. But even so, that was a nasty one, him glancing the inside wall and putting it and binning it for the race's only safety car of the day. You know, more on that later on as well, because at the back of the field had a bit of drama as well. But no, like, Ollie Behrman's exceptional. Do not get it twisted. He's going to be in F1 next year. I'm almost.
That was honest to God, that was a legitimate driver of the year candidate.
Absolutely. Sensational work. I happily would too. That was a phenomenal standing performance. It was more than you could ever hope for. Mad impressive. All the world's press was impressed. You know, I also, before I move on, a couple of extra notes on that. One, I love his dad and how nervy he was in the Ferrari garage. Okay.
If you thumped him, he would have just about shattered.
What color is his jeans? Brown. Brown. after all of that. That man was shitting bricks. But so nervy. That is good, wholesome. And I know his dad's rich as fuck, but I love that just doesn't matter, because he's just nervous as shit over his son. And his son did him very proud. And, you know, John Elkann, who was obviously president of Ferrari, was there this weekend, and he was absolutely glowing, saying, yes, this is, you know, we took bets on our young talent and it's come through, says man who's going to open a boatload of money to sign a 40-year-old Lewis Hamilton next year.
Well,
I love this dumb sport.
not your average 40-year-old in this case.
No. Definitely not. That's a 40-year-old you go out and sign if you can get it. But, you know, like, yeah. I just thought it was a funny quote more than anything else. But, no, Oddie Bearman, sensational. Look, let's not forget, he's got 6 free practice ones with Haas later on this year. I mean, pencil him in now for next year. He's going to be in Haas next year. I'm almost certain of that.
Yeah, because we know Nico's looking elsewhere, potentially at maybe the Audi seat. Yeah, the now fully owned by Audi going
forward.
Audi's
buying the whole damn thing, not just 75%. It's going to be the Audi team with no affiliation.
Yep. And we know that Magnussen is under the gun right now for his performances. Speaking of which.
Indeed. Further downfield, there was controversy amongst shithassery. Kevin Magnussen picked up 20 seconds worth of time penalties after causing a collision with Alex Albon and then leaving the track.
Can I just say, if you're going to get a penalty, go all out with it.
Yeah.
Be a monster.
Absolutely. And then obviously leaving the track to gain an advantage later on as well to keep the position. And yeah, both were 10-second time penalties, so 20 in total. And he did it to keep a queue of cars behind him. This opened up the strategy to let teammate Nico Hülkenberg pin in front of him and keep 10th place, giving Haas a vital point. RB has since complained to the FIA to make sure Haas's, quote, unsportsmanlike tactics aren't repeated, with sporting director Alan Permain saying it was, quote, a bit too much. Which I think is a very British way of describing things. It's as polite a manner as possible.
Much.
A bit much. A bit much, mate. You know, as you do. There's a very British way of dealing with things right there, in the most passive-aggressive but seemingly polite way possible. Quote, do you agree with how the incidents were handled? You can't see it, but Cam's kind of weighing his arms up right here.
This was the only storyline as Red Bull crashed the entire vending machine on the field up front.
Full Mortal Kombat arcade cabinet fatality style there.
Yeah, they actually dropped the arcade cabinet on Ferrari's head.
Mm.
As far as Magnussen holding the field back, what does it say about Saudi Arabia as a track that my dude was going seconds a lap off the pace and no one could do anything about it?
Mm. From what I could see, and I subscribe to Blake, you may know him as Brake on social media, does fantastic work. He used to be Max Verstappen's performance engineer. He's since become a content creator and video maker, and now works for Lamborghini's Iron Lynx hypercar project. So yeah, my man's doing work, and good for him. He's a very sound guy, great to work with. But he looked at the lap time chart of this race, and this was intentional. Like, once they realized Magnussen had the first 10-second penalty, he knew he had no chance of getting points. Haas changed tack. They were like, fucking back the wagon up and just clear the space for Hülkenberg, because they knew his only threat for a point was Zhou Guanyu, and he was on the same strategy as Hülkenberg, which was, don't pit during the early safety car, we'll come in later, maybe hope there's another safety car later where we can make our gains back. But Magnussen was going 1.5 seconds a lap slower, like, comfortably. And he was doing
it.
It was all
in the middle of the track, so there was just nothing anybody could do about it.
Yeah, he backed the wagon up. He was going 1.5 seconds a lap slower. It opened up a 20-second gap in front of him, and that was enough for Hülkenberg to get a free pit stop in, come back out in front of the train, and then you look at the lap time chart. Once Hülkenberg's back in front, Magnussen speeds up again. He's going back to full. It was intentional. It was fully intentional.
It's like what Lewis did back in Abu Dhabi 2016, where he would just crank the engine into meme mode where he was under threat to be passed from DRS. And then just, it was a nice Sunday drive through the country everywhere else. I don't really have an issue with that, because ultimately, you've got the position. If you want to be a bastard, use it.
Absolutely.
I have a little bit of an issue with the fact that he did an illegal pass to get position and then back the field up.
That's my issue with this. Like, RB, I know a lot of people dunked on RB and came out with the easy, oh, why don't you just pass him then? Well, look, you're Formula One fans. If you're F1 fans, you know that it's not as simple as that in these cars. We know that some of these deltas on certain tracks can be off the charts of the amount of dirty air that these cars generate, and certain tracks are just not conducive towards passing.
It was at the point, right, Trey, where even early on, like, after the initial safety car, the Red Bulls had to take a little bit to get back to the front as to not just go balls to the wall and burn their tires out. Max actually had to size up Norris for 2 or 3 laps before he got past him.
Yeah.
The Delta is just too big here. Like, you needed so much speed, and everyone was struggling for traction in the final corner. I mean, it didn't matter what kind of tire you were on, what kind of fuel load, what car you were in, everyone was skating. And it made it very difficult to exploit that long front straight in DRS zone.
Absolutely. And that's my issue is not the tactics involved. Like, Haas are well within their rights to play that how they played it.
And
they
got a point out of it. It worked.
Yeah. The rules are ripe for exploitation.
Who of us on Motorsport 101 and affiliated networks thought that Haas would have points in round 2 this year?
Not me. Like, fair play to Aya Komatsu, and Ian, this is our mistake. We were wrong. Haas are clearly better than we gave them credit for in preseason testing, because they're genuinely,
in race trim.
Yeah, they've improved. They are genuinely good in race trim right now. I'm look, Magnussen has got, you know, was 11th on the road for most of that race. Hülkenberg genuinely in the points on merit. Haas are clearly not the worst team in F1 right now, and we thought they were going to be bottom feeders.
Oh, we know who is.
Yeah, we'll briefly mention him in a bit, but yeah, I mean, it's the issue is not with Haas's tactics. You're well within your rights to do that. Yes, it's naughty. Yes, it's exploiting the rules, and that's my problem. The rule itself is the problem. Yes, you can give a 10-second time penalty. This was a suggestion from the FIA to up collisions being caused and leaving track to gain an advantage penalties up to 10 seconds, because it used to be 5 last year. And I'm glad they've addressed that, because last year this was a genuine problem where faster cars would bully you out of the way and take a penalty because they know they could drive out in front of you afterwards once they were in clean air. Thought it was a rule that was ripe for exploitation. We saw Sergio Perez do it to Albon in Singapore. George Russell did it to Oscar Piastri in COTA's sprint race. Lewis Hamilton did it to Oscar Piastri in Monza. Like, it's where faster cars, if they know they can game the system, will take the penalty, and because it won't affect their finishing position anyway. So it's bullshit, and I'm glad that it's been upped. I'm going to make a case here that I think they're still being too generous. I think it now
it's done, right, Dre, is that it's become the worst of both worlds, where now it gives you a higher penalty, but if you're in the right position, you just use that car as meat. You use that as a sacrificial lamb for your other car and use it as a rear gunner.
It's a battering ram now, and I think there's an easy solution to this. You tell the driver via race control to give the position back, or it's a drive-through penalty. Force you to lose the position.
I say at this point, I would say give him 3. You have 3 laps to redress the position, or you come into the pits for a drive through.
I agree. I actually had a chat with Anil Palmer from the F1 subreddit. So he's a moderator over there, and he said the same thing. I tried to talk it down before Saudi Arabia started saying that 10 seconds is fine. I quite like that rule change. He said drive through. And I thought that might be a bit much, but now having watched this race, it would kill 2 birds with 1 stone. It's a deterrent, and it would stop people from using those kind of tactics, like Magnussen mentioned, where you're basically using your car as a battering ram to stay in front. That's not Formula One, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, I respect Haas for gaming the rules to get a point out of it. I would too if I was Aya Komatsu, who, again, is doing great work at Haas at the moment by the sounds of it, but the rule is the problem, not the people exploiting it. The rule is flawed. You know, you need to address that. And I think the easy way of doing that is give the position back or take a drive-through penalty. Because a drive-through will actually dent someone's race significantly. That's about a 15-second penalty.
And they're roughly traditionally on a timer. in F1, where if you're assessed a drive-through, you only have a couple of laps to...
Three.
You get three laps. After that, they just stop scoring you.
Yeah. If you don't serve a drive-through penalty in three laps, it's a black flag, you're disqualified. It's no nonsense. So, like, for once, I'm saying take a page out of IndyCar's book, because IndyCar doesn't do time penalties. They just go straight in with a drive-through if you have avoidable contact, as we'll get to on tomorrow's episode recording. Ding! But I think it's very easy to criticize RB for crying over spilt milk, but they did make a valid point that it is a bit unsportsmanlike, and it probably isn't a good look that almost running someone into a wall to keep a position so your teammate can score a point. It is a bit of a shitty look. I'm not disputing that, and yeah, I think the rule needs to be tightened up on that a little bit. I'm not against 10 seconds, but I think they need to go one further. I think we need to be talking drive-through penalties. Leave the time penalties for the really, like, freeing stuff like a jump start or an unsafe result,
which we had. Perez got. We had a jump start,
kind of.
But the sensors didn't see it, so it's okay.
You know what it is? I think, because this is regarding to Lando Norris off the start, I think the car was moving, but I think he was still in his box when the light actually went out. And because he wasn't moving, technically he's not gained an advantage.
I thought his wheels were ahead of the white line.
Well, we would know, because the transponder says so. It's a slam dunk penalty if he's out of his box. So apparently he wasn't. Like,
you remember when you said a couple of weeks ago, finally, we got the big scoop before a recording. And since then, F1 has just been, motorsport at large has just been kicking our ass with this stuff. The point where a possible jump start is like the smallest footnote in the entire episode.
Yeah, or Pierre Gasly's gearbox exploding on the way to the grid, and now Pierre Gasly is 21st in a 20-car championship. Yeah.
You know how slow Magnussen was going? The Alpine looked competitive. That's all you need to know.
Exactly.
Esteban Ocon passed people. So slow was that train.
It's indeed.
Oh, yeah. More Alpine firings.
More Alpine firings. Well, leavings. Bob Beer's gone. Gone to be, I think it's an executive at Aston Martin. I mean, it seems like a promotion, to be fair. I think he was an advisor in the Alpine unit, and he's now moving over to Aston Martin. Maybe to work with Fernando again, by the looks of it. So, you know, good for him, I suppose.
You know, this used to be my team. 10 years ago, this used to be my team. They wish they had the E22 back. The E22 looks like a goddamn masterpiece compared to this thing.
They are so bad right now. Esteban Ocon, bless him, tried. He really tried in that Grand Prix. He put in a shift, bless his heart. But the ongoing crime of 1031 is still happening at Alpine right now, so good luck to them. Annoyingly, we can't escape Saudi Arabia without yet more in the ongoing Red Bull Christian Horner bullshit drama, because there was a lot of quotes and a lot of actions that went down during this weekend. Now, it turns out over the course of Saudi Arabia, Helmut Marko, he went public and said that he was potentially under investigation for the leaks that happened to the evidence in the case, allegedly, between Horner and the employee that filed the complaint. That employee has now been suspended by Red Bull Racing. We found that out on Thursday, the first day of the weekend. And that went over about as well as you'd expect, quite frankly. Grim, to say the least.
You're getting suspended. No, you're getting suspended. No, our engine manufacturer is leaving. Oh, our team is splitting. What are we to believe at this point?
It's incredible. The twists and turns that is still developing in this story. Like, Marco was apparently on the brink of walking away from the team on Thursday. People thought he was leaving the track early to not come back. He came back on Friday and said, oh, no, by the way, I've had a talk with Oliver Mintzlaff. Because, yes, the CEO of Red Bull Global was here this weekend. Oliver Mintzlaff was in the camp this weekend. Apparently, Marco had a word with him. He's like, no, everything's cool. And the new message is, everything's calm, please disperse, while Red Bull... So, well, Red Bull team boss Christian Horner at one point basically tried to call Max's bluff by saying no one's bigger than the team, which is ironic coming from him, given he started all of this shit, allegedly. And, you know, 2 days later, he's basically saying, oh, well, you know, we wouldn't stand in his way if Max wanted to leave, because the latest rumor is now that Max may give up the 4 years left on his contract to go to Mercedes. Toto shit-stirring as he normally does by saying, oh, well, who wouldn't want to have Max Verstappen in their car? No shit, he's the best driver in the world, Toto. Duh.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want the guy who just does F1 as his weekend hobby and spends his weeks in his actual job, iRacing?
Of course, which he was doing with a controller in his hotel room on Tuesday. Normal.
Told you. I could beat his ass in Mario Kart.
Sure. But on a serious note...
What the fuck?
The fuck is going on, man?
There's been so much shit thrown on every side. From people inside the team, people outside the team, people in Red Bull Greater, Ford, people on the ground, the media centers, other teams. It feels like my head's going to explode. And I mean, in all of this, BBC Sport was comfortable enough to, but we've talked about the libel laws over in the UK, right, Dre?
Right.
And they were comfortable enough to publish in their article about this that the woman was suspended from Red Bull due to dishonesty during the investigation.
Oh, now that I didn't know.
Yeah, it's in the BBC article about it from Andrew Benson. And
I need to stress, as Cam double, and I'll double down on what Cam said. If that's coming out of a UK publication, they must be 110% sure that is genuine, because UK libel laws are extremely strict, like far more strict than in the US.
The company cannot comment on this internal matter, a Red Bull spokesperson said on Thursday. BBC Sport has learned the reason given by Red Bull to the employee is that she had been dishonest.
Now, how far does that go?
Who the fuck if I know?
Right, like the gray area. I mean, the thing is as well, because Red Bull has been so opaque about this investigation.
You don't fucking know.
Like the FIA, and there's credit to Jenna Fryer for this, because she put this out there on Twitter, and Jenna Fryer with the Associated Press. Again, the AP is the biggest name in the biz. If they're coming out with this with confidence, and I'm inclined to believe it. The FIA, Formula One, Ford, and multiple partners all asked for a copy of the report, and Red Bull has refused to give it to them. And now BBC has got on the record and said the victim had been dishonest. Well, how far does that go? We don't know, because there's been such a massive gray area. There's no fucking
transparency.
Yeah. There's such a massive gray area on this investigation that we can't really do anything with that information, because we don't have any context or nuance to place it in. We have to just throw our hands up and say, well, fuck it if we know, which is just not ideal as journalists, as opinionated F1 fans, the people who care about this. I mean, I was so low going into Saudi Arabia this weekend, because it just felt fucking rotten being a Formula One fan when the news dropped that she'd been suspended. Now, at the time, I didn't know that was the reason why, but we didn't know that at the time. But when the reports first came through, I'm like, we're in the middle of Saudi Arabia. Drivers are being paid to promote this new fucking Mario Kart circuit they're trying to build in the middle of their country. And it's worth pointing out as well, the F1 Academy had its second season kick off this weekend as well. A country they're trying very hard to crack because of the obvious associations of Saudi Arabia and their horrible human rights record. Let's not forget, you couldn't drive a car in Saudi Arabia if you're a woman until 2018. You know, So normal. It's, you know, it sucks.
It just feels like.
Meh.
It just feels like an ongoing snowballing effect of everyone's trying to get their mans and everyone's caught in the wake of it.
Yeah, and everyone's just miserable. Like, it sucks that it's
fucking misery-inducing.
Yeah, it sucks that it came down to Laura Winter, who came out with a fantastic speech on Friday's run-in during the F1 Academy about women in motorsport and their place and the fact that they belong on the grid. And it's almost bittersweet because it was a powerful speech, and I'm glad Laura was given the platform to say it. Laura Winter's a fine broadcaster, and she herself has been very honest and open about coming out of an abusive relationship herself to, you know, in terms of how she's progressed in her career. If you find her on Twitter, she's very open in talking about it. She's an incredible woman, and I don't want to use the almost stereotypical moniker of strong women, because it's almost ironic how that's used these days, because we expect women to be strong because they kind of have to be in this position in Formula One in the first place. My heart went out to Susie Wolf, and Susie's been through the ringer already. We all know what happened with Wolf Garzy back in December, where entire integrity is being questioned. And then the F1 Academy gets...
We have plenty of F1 business fucking chiming in during this whole saga.
Yeah.
As if anyone should listen to anything they have to say.
This was meant to be the F1 Academy's finest hour, their shining moment, first race of their second season in Saudi Arabia, a place which has been hostile for women for many, many years. Biggest platform they've ever had, actual hype, because people wanted there to be live streamed coverage, and we got it. And all that in the dark shadow and cloud of one of the nastiest public investigations, and basically F1's equivalent of the quiet part being said out loud. Now, what does it say about the state of the sport that Christian Horner would be more likely to lose his job if Max Verstappen left this team than if he did or did not sexually harass a member of his own staff?
It says it all really now, doesn't it?
I get it. Max Verstappen is the most guaranteed half second we've ever seen in Formula One, but shit like this shouldn't come down to performance reasons. And now, unfortunately, because of the horrible way Red Bull has handled this story, we now genuinely don't know what's real and what isn't real anymore.
Yeah. Every other day we hear about how Newey, who, let's not forget, is the godfather of one of Christian Horner's kids.
Right. Incredibly close. Family friend. You know, yeah, not just
family
employee.
Friend. It goes beyond the traditional, you know, professional relationship between those two. Mm. Is supposedly going to leave and go to insert place here. And then we hear that he's going to stay whether Horner's there or not. Everyone has chimed in without knowing whether they're right or wrong to get a piece of the pie, because Red Bull's been completely opaque about this, and we can't just sit there and not say anything. Everyone has to get their word in about it, regardless of what it actually says.
Because we're sports fans, and the humanity kind of
media.
We're sports fans, we're sports media.
You have to invent a story no matter how much you actually have to go on.
Even if we don't know what the story is, there has to be a story. And that's... It's like a heel version of the never ending story. You want the pen to stop writing at a certain point, because this is morbid. This is horrible.
They're trying to rip the pen out of the man's. And it's not going to stop.
No.
Like, this is going to be a shadow over this whole season, probably next season. Unless we get some clear answers, and those are not coming.
Yeah. We don't know what the truth is anymore. And I don't know what's real, what isn't real. All I know is it's nasty. It's nasty. It's horrible. And it seems to me at this point, the humanity of the victim has been completely lost in the shuffle of all of this, where now instead it's all a matter of, does this mean Max will leave Red Bull? Because people need something to cling on to in an otherwise uncompetitive 2024 season. And I want to shake people by the shoulder and say, fuck, it's not about this. This is about far bigger things in life than whether some Dutchman wins a Grand Prix or not. These are people's livelihoods we're fucking with here. it just feels like that's all been lost in the shuffle now, because it feels more like a football transfer story rather than a deeply troubling humanitarian issue, corporate issue, and an alleged abuse of power. And that's hard to swallow. It's genuinely difficult being a fan of the sport at times like this, because look, I know a lot of people are very quick in other series or other fans of motorsport to say, go watch something else, right? And I get that to a degree, because you want to take advantage of F1.
It's not about watching something else. It's about watching this and seeing what's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
Spilling over into the public.
Yeah. And what I would say to you is that most F1 fans grew up loving this sport, loving the cars. It was the first series that most of them had access to. A lot of people aren't interested in watching something else. They want the series that they love to be better. And that's the point. We have to do better with what we've got in Formula One. Otherwise, this is going to keep happening. And this isn't going to stop. And I completely agree with you, Cam. This story is not going away. It's probably not going to go away anytime soon. I think it will calm down a little bit now, because like pretty much everybody in Red Bull is now saying we need to move on. Like Mintzlaff said it, Marco said, Mintzlaff didn't talk to the press, but he apparently told them off the record, I just want calmness right now. Marco said the same thing. Horner's desperately trying to say, let's move on from this. We're trying to blow out the fans of the kitchen fire he's created.
I think on a Red Bull, like internally within the, not the team, but Red Bull greater, Red Bull proper.
Mm.
There's a lot of mutually assured destruction on both sides.
Absolutely.
Because
if there is one thing we do know for sure, it does look like there is a genuine power struggle in that camp.
Oh, and we knew about it ever since the big man died. It has been a question of when, not if. Because we know that there are people on the record in that team or within the Austrian side of Red Bull that do not like the involvement in Formula One, never have. They're not happy that the money for their own projects went into silly vroom vroom cars. But also they have to understand that within that team, they're crushing the field for a reason.
Right.
And Horner has built this team over the last 20 years into an absolute wrecking machine out on track. And if they want to continue being successful, everyone's got to put their egos away and put away the power trip.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Horner, Helmut Marko, egos, never.
Yeah, two of the more humble figures in F1's paddock. You know,
go to hell.
Christian Horner, a man who has absolutely embraced being the pantomime villain of this sport, is now reaping what he's had to sow and does not like it. That Thursday, Friday press conference where he had to try and say, oh, I want to draw a line under this and move on. My wife's been incredibly supportive. Like that was the man flustered. He's starting to feel it now. And he's had 2 weeks of a barrage of questions and he can't hack it no more. Like the panto jokes are over, Christian. This is your reality now. You're now like you are the dog meme of the guy sitting in his own kitchen fire and now trying to tell the world that this is fine. This is not fine. This is fucked up. And it's not going to go away anytime soon. Good luck to you. Good luck to all of you, because between you, you're going to have to sit around the table at some point and beat your heads together, because this is spinning over and no one's winning. This is ugly. The whole sport thinks it's ugly. The governing body thinks it's ugly. Your power unit suppliers. The fact that Honda, who are normally dead-ass quiet about these things, had to come out and release a statement. They're infuriated, because I know how Honda gets down. If they're coming out with statements, this is a lot. This is too much, man. This is fucking wild.
Yeah, because no matter what the outcome, no matter what the truth of it is, it's brought the team into disrepute.
100%. And yeah,
if you're one of these, the powers that be are the only ones to blame.
Yeah, good luck to them. They're all going to have to figure this out. Formula One is back in a week's time in Australia for the Australian Grand Prix. Great news for us British folks. It's going to be a 4 a.m. start this year because they pulled the start time in a couple of hours this year. Hoorah. Ugh, love that for me. But yeah, next up will be our MotoGP season opener episode in Qatar, to which I say in the start of Gordon Ramsay, finally, some good fucking racing in the lower classes. But hey, that's neither here nor there. We'll discuss that next time out. But so until next time, from me, Dre Harrison, and from Callum Buckley, we'll see you next time. Thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
Still, could be worse. Could be Alpine.
It'll be interesting to see if that makes the final edit.